was, we don't want this, you know, we don't want our relationship threatened, but we have to go along with the, you know, the insane elderly relative in the White House.
Some speculate that this crisis is not really about Ukraine, but in fact about the relationship between Russia and Germany, about Nord Stream 2, the gas pipeline that they've just finished building between Russia and Germany. What do you make of that?
Well, certainly there's a big lobby group within Washington, and certainly one within London, that didn't want to see Nord Stream 2 completed, that didn't want to see that trading relationship enhanced even further. They've largely failed because the pipeline itself has actually reached completion. The Germans are just holding up finalization of it through some sort of bureaucratic creation. This is another attempt to try and stymie a natural trading relationship, which it is natural that the United Germany and Russia have this economic relationship, and it's only going to develop further because these are two big potential markets for each other. And again, this is what I would call an undoubted contradiction of capitalism playing itself out in real time. Like, you have the impulse for the Germans to trade and make money in Russia, and for the Russians to do likewise. But then you have on top of that, imperialism's concern, U.S. imperialism's concern to try and retain control. And these two things are running into each other, and Ukraine is part of the process of that playing itself out to a conclusion, which, well, we don't know yet, but is most likely to be the further diminishing of U.S. power, I would argue, rather than its enhancement.
Communique is a program in which Richard Medhurst, the independent journalist and political commentator, gives his views of controversial issues of our time and interviews famous politicians and personalities. This program is broadcast every Sunday by IRIB English Radio.
You know, there are many things that the media are not telling you about Ukraine. The first is NATO expansion. NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, is a military alliance that was created right at the start of the Cold War back in 1949 with the aim of containing the Soviet Union. However, the Soviet Union ceased to exist in 1991. And if NATO's entire purpose was to counter the Soviets, then why does it still exist? It doesn't serve any actual purpose. The only things we've seen NATO do in recent times are things like destroying Libya, Syria, and others. And so when the Soviet Union collapsed, the Russians were concerned that NATO would continue expanding eastwards and eventually surround them with military bases. They made this clear to the West, and there was an understanding that NATO would not expand any further. Obviously, that promise has been broken. Since 1990, 14 countries have joined NATO. Russia is now surrounded not by just one NATO member, but five NATO members. I mean, come on, does anyone think that the United States would accept one enemy on its borders, never mind five? Do you think that 6% or 16% would make a difference to Washington? Of course not. The United States would lose it if one of its neighboring countries joined a military alliance with Russia. Let me give you a real-world example. In 1961, the United States tried to overthrow the Castro government in Cuba, in what is known as the Bay of Pigs. After this attempted coup, the Cubans asked the Soviets to place nuclear missiles in Cuba as a deterrent. And when the Americans realized what was happening in 1962, this caused such an outrage, such a crisis, that it's still talked about to this day. People still learn about it in school and university. The Cuban Missile Crisis is one of the most important moments in the entire Cold War. And why? Because the US felt threatened by foreign weapons on its doorstep. So if it's not okay for Russia to place weapons on the U.S. border, why is it okay for the U.S. to place weapons on Russia's border? How would Americans feel in Russia's shoes? In December 2021, Russia issued a basic list of demands in order to calm the situation. Russia wants NATO to stop deploying troops near its borders and return to their pre-expansion positions in 1997. Russia also asked that Ukraine not be allowed to join NATO. But of course, Russia's legitimate security concerns are dismissed as non-starters. And then the West says that Russia refuses to engage in diplomacy. The thing is, though, this whole situation isn't just about Ukraine. It is also about Germany. The Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline between Russia and Germany was just recently completed in September 2021. You might recall Biden saying that the U.S. will no longer oppose it. Well, that's not entirely true. Take a look at what Biden just said a few days ago when he was giving a press conference right alongside German Chancellor Olaf Scholz.
The first question first. If Germany, if Russia invades, that means tanks or troops crossing the border of Ukraine again, then there will be no longer a Nord Stream 2. We will bring an end to it.
How will you do that exactly, since the project and control of the project is within Germany's control?
We will, I promise you, we'll be able to do it.
So Joe Biden, the U.S. president, is standing right there next to the German Chancellor, Olaf Scholz, and speaking on his behalf, speaking for Germany. I mean, that is not only extremely disrespectful, but it's so telling. He's just straight up admitting to you who's really running the show. Now, Russia is already Europe's biggest supplier of gas, with around 40% of the market share. The completion of Nord Stream 2, of this pipeline, is so significant because it provides Europe with cheap, inexpensive gas while also boosting Russia's economy and prestige. It strengthens ties between Russia and Germany, and that is the last thing the U.S. wants. Remember, half the Cold War took place in Germany. Germany still has roughly 38,000 U.S. troops stationed there. And in order to justify NATO's existence and NATO's presence, the U.S. needs to sell this idea that Russia is aggressive, out of control, and must be contained. The U.S. needs to do this so it can justify having all these bases and tens of thousands of troops all over Europe. The United States has just sent 5,000 troops to Ukraine, along with a $200 million package of weapons in December 2021. But that's not all. Another thing the media aren't telling you is who the U.S. is supporting in Ukraine. The United States is supporting actual neo-Nazis, like the Azov Battalion. Last week, the Western media tried to pull off this propaganda stunt of showing a Ukrainian grandmother on the ground with a Kalashnikov learning to shoot in case the big bad Russians invade. Not only is this extremely tacky and cheap, but look at the arm patch on the guy who's teaching her to shoot. That symbol is called a Wolfsangel. It's a symbol used by a Nazi division in World War II, specifically the 2nd SS Panzer Division, Das Reich. This is the same division which committed the infamous massacre in the French village of Oradour. Al Jazeera did a segment on the neo-Nazi Freikorps in Ukraine, which is another one of these neo-Nazi militias. And pay attention. When they asked one of the members what their political ideology is, they refused to answer. I wonder why.
When you say they are more ideologically closer to you, can you tell me what you mean by that? How? What do you believe in ideologically?
Can we pause that?
Let me repeat that so there's no mistake. Yes, the United States is funding neo-Nazi militias in Ukraine. And then they talk about Russia being a threat. I mean, this is scandalous. You know, when they say Russia is threatening Ukraine, is that really true, or is it Ukraine and NATO threatening Russia? How would the Americans feel if Russia surrounded the United States with bases, or if Canada and Mexico joined a military alliance with Russia? How is it that Russia moving Russian troops inside Russia is a threatening buildup of troops, but Britain and America sending weapons to Ukraine, sending troops to Ukraine, with talk of NATO membership, that's not threatening to Russia? This double standard and hypocrisy, I mean, it couldn't be more obvious. And of course, if you dare to open your mouth and say that, hey, you know, Russia's security concerns might actually be legitimate, then you're reduced to a Putin puppet or a Kremlin asset by neoliberals and neocons alike. That's what they do when they want to silence dissent, they want to silence criticism. That's their go-to tool. Just call someone a Russian asset. And so we really get to see again how ridiculous the corporate Western media is, how they march in lockstep with the CIA in complete conformity. Just like with Iraq, Libya, Syria, Vietnam, they take anything the CIA tells them and report it as fact. There's no scrutiny whatsoever. You know, hardly anyone pauses for a second to ask, hey, is this true? Do you have anything to back this claim up? The corporate media is truly a mouthpiece of the state and the arms dealers. And you know, it's very easy to buy into Western propaganda. There's nothing special about that. There's nothing tough about going along with the lies in the mainstream. However, what does take some effort is to look past the propaganda and to make a slight effort to try and understand a simple concept, that agreements should be respected, and Russia, just like the United States, does not want adversarial troops, nukes, and missiles on its borders. It's really not that complicated. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Richard Medhurst, and this is The Communique.
In the limelight.
The U.S. and its accomplices in the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO, have again committed a heinous crime and pushed another country into a terrible crisis, resulting in unnecessary bloodbath and destruction of towns and cities. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Kahan International staff writer. This article is published under the heading U.S. pushes Ukraine into an unnecessary war. Stay tuned for more. The U.S. and its accomplices in the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO, have again committed a heinous crime and pushed another country into a terrible crisis, resulting in unnecessary bloodbath and destruction of towns and cities. For months, if not years, these devils in human form, which are behind wars, pandemics, and displacement of people all over the world, had been instigating the leadership in Ukraine against the motherland of all Slavic people, that is Russia, whose series of advice to provocateurs not to stir up sedition fell on deaf ears. Moscow had no other choice, and in order to safeguard the security of the Ukrainian people and prevent their absorption into a dangerous military bloc, finally sent its troops across the borders. The Blitzkrieg seems to have delivered its message, and now President Vladimir Putin, in a masterstroke of diplomacy, has invited his counterpart in Kiev, Volodymyr Zelensky, who allowed himself to be deceived by the US and West Europe. The people of Ukraine have become embroiled in a war not of their own making, but imposed upon them by the United States, the Great Satan, which is behind crises all over the world. In Venezuela and other Latin American states, people are suffering because of Washington's stirring up of seditions. In Syria and in Iraq, the presence of U.S. troops in preventing these countries from resolving their problems and embarking upon reconstruction after years of the streams of bloodletting by terrorists of all hue and color, armed by the West and the Zionist regime, and funded by reactionary Arab regimes. Yemen has been robbed of peace and stability by the almost daily bombing of towns and cities by the Saudis and the Emiratis on the orders of the U.S. Afghanistan has been reduced to poverty and its assets blocked by Uncle Sam after two decades of occupation. The people of Bahrain have been deprived of democracy because of the support of the Yankees for the repressive Al Khalifa minority regime. Palestine continues to groan under the jackboots of the Zionist usurpers who are armed and aided by the American regime to indulge in the most horrible crimes against humanity. China is constantly threatened by U.S. meddling in and militarization of the breakaway island of Taiwan, as well as provocations by the American Navy in the South China Sea. In addition, American occupation forces in South Korea and Japan pose the greatest danger to peace in the East Asia region. Last but not the least, the U.S., through its policy of economic terrorism, is trying to impose an unjust and unfair nuclear accord on the Islamic Republic after 4 decades of committing every imaginable crime against the people of Iran, who do not need the permission of anyone to process nuclear energy for peaceful purposes.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
For humanity.
Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir la'in ar-rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to IRIB English Radio, and you are listening to the program For Humanity. We are looking at justice being the core of human rights and humanity. And we are looking at justice from the perspectives or the perspective of Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam, the commander of the faithful. Now, Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam, even he himself, when he accepted the Khilafah or the Caliphate, he accepted it under one condition, and that is a firm determination to establish truth and justice and destroy falsehood. And to the extent that he was willing to give and sacrifice his very life for it. And ultimately, he, alayhi salam, did. It was on this account that he insisted that the people themselves, I mean, it doesn't matter whether it is Amir al-Mu'mineen or not, he insisted that people should watch the activities and the actions of the rulers and should not accept a ruler who did not prove to be a public servant. As simple as that. Because a person is in power, it doesn't mean that me and you, we take our hands off and we say, well, what can I do? I can't do anything. And I say this, you say that, and people say the same thing, and then our rights get taken. Amir al-Mu'mineen says, no. A ruler, it doesn't matter who he is, needs to be washed. Even Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in the Quran, he says, when he talks about people, he says, we will ask people. And we will ask those who were sent to people too. So Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala sends the messengers to us, the prophets, which are infallible. But even Allah says, I will hold them accountable. I mean, not to say that they made any mistake or anything, but the concept, the notion of questioning and keeping an eye on things needs to be maintained. So Amir al-Mu'mineen says that as people, we need to watch the activities and actions of the rulers. When we don't see them becoming public servants, we need to speak out. He also advised us and advised people of his time. And this message obviously continues and will echo until the day of judgment, or at least until the appearance of the Savior. He said that you need to express displeasure on the bad activities and the actions of a ruler, so they are aware of it. When a ruler and a king and a president comes up with a law and signs up, a treaty or what have you, and forces people into something that is bad for them, the people not need to show that they are displeased with that. They should rage. They should go out to the streets. They should make their voices being heard. They should say, no, that is not acceptable. And they do not, obviously, give the green light to the leader or the ruler. Because those rulers, when they issue a statement, or when they issue a law, when they issue a command, and it is applied, they don't face objection from people, it will continue. They will think, well, people don't say anything, so I might as well do it. Amir al-Mu'mineen says, no, you need to speak out. You need to talk. Now, let us take a short break and then we continue after.
Dear listeners, you're listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program For Humanity, coming to you from IRIB English Radio. Just before the break, we were saying that Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam was advising people that they need to express their minds and to speak out when they see their leaders are not applying justice and not giving people their basic human rights. He said in one of his sayings, he says, do you not feel annoyed and displeased if foolish persons become your rulers and consequently you are humiliated and afflicted and ruined? Because he can see that. He's watching people at his time, obviously under the caliphs of those before him, or even the people of Sham who were under the rulership of Muawiyah. He says, doesn't that displease you? Doesn't that annoy you? Doesn't that make a change inside you? Doesn't that make you rage from the inside? And they are your leaders. You're giving them obedience. And all they're doing is causing you humility. They're inflicting all sorts of pain upon you. And they are ruining your lives. And you don't say anything? What is wrong with you? What has gotten into your brains? When will you wake up? And Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi constantly used to remind people of that. He says, people, you need to wake up. And he keeps saying, rights are taken, not given. Al-haq yu'khad wa la yu'ta. That when I have a right, I have to go seek it myself. The president, the government, the king, or the ruler, or whoever might be in power, is not going to knock on my door and say to me, oh, would you please accept Medicare? Would you please accept education? Would you please accept money? they won't do that. I and you have to go to them and take our rights from them. That's how it works, not vice versa. So when Amir al-Mu'mineen used to watch people being subjected, tortured, afflicted with all sorts of pain and suffering, and they don't say anything, and he says, what's wrong with you? Don't you feel anything? I mean, I wish Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam was here today, and he will be saying the exact same thing, where he looks at us, be it Muslim or non-Muslims, living under these systems that are oppressive, where our rights are being taken, our wealth is being taken, our dignity is being taken, and we are not saying anything. All we can say is, what can I do? You know, all we said is to criticize and talk until the sun rises, and we don't do any change. Amir al-Mu'mineen, if he was here, he would say the same thing. What's wrong with you? Do you not feel annoyed and displeased when those foolish people become your rulers and leaders? And consequently, you are humiliated and afflicted and ruined? And I said to Amir al-Mu'mineen, we surely don't feel anything anymore. We'll leave it here and we will continue in other episodes. Thank you for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa alihi. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa alihi. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa alihi. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa alihi.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Welcome back to Aperture. We witnessed the spectacular and awe-inspiring natural beauty of the Kaluts or Yardangs in the western part of Dashtalut in Iran. Rising up to 80 meters, these streamlined ridges have been carved by the wind out of the clay and sand lining the desert floor, creating a magnificent array of high-rising sculptures and lying parallel to the prevailing winds. The Yardangs are some of the world's most prominent. Stay with us as we follow Javad Gharoyi, an Iranian nature explorer and documentary filmmaker, as he introduces more of Iran's desert wonders to us.
Early the next morning, I was still sleepy and tired, but some of the most beautiful natural views revealed themselves in the moments before sunrise. The cold and the dark couldn't stop me from exploring the natural beauties near my camp. The early hours of morning in the natural world fills you with energy. Filled to the brim with that energy that emanates from the peace and tranquility bestowed upon this land by God Almighty, I started my day that promised to be a good one. I spent 3 hours exploring the areas around my tent, taking beautiful photos of the unmatched scenery of the Kaluts, a precious gift by Mother Nature to those who appreciate her. It was time for me to leave the imaginary city of Kaluts, a city with great potential for becoming a destination for responsible tourists and nature travelers. The most beautiful natural scenes should either be visited in the early hours of morning or sometime around sundown. I got up at 6 o'clock this morning and was able to take spectacular snaps of the natural beauties around here with this very camera. I have to say, I love Iran with all my being because of its very rich culture and its remarkably diverse natural beauties. It's time to go now. I have to pack up. I gotta put my tent back into my backpack and head out for the Kaluts again. This is my last day here. I can't stay here much longer because I'm running out of food and water. Not only the Kaluts, but the entire vast Lut region are considered as an invaluable natural museum in the world. All by itself, the Lut Desert is home to a world of numerous beauties, the like of which are scattered in different places across our planet. Without a doubt, it's among the most beautiful deserts on Earth. The Yalon mega dunes with their rare views, the Kaluts, the star-shaped dunes, the beautiful valleys in the heart of Lut, the hottest part of Dashtalut, which is Gandumberyan, a large plateau covered in dark lava, the unique vegetation, including small trees named Saxols, the Martian or miniature mountains on the fringes of Lut, the central hole, the Dolphin Valley comprised of rock formations eroded by wind, Dashtakashk, and the plant and animal species endemic to Lut. Add to all that the villages with their unique desert architecture, people whose cultures go back 6,000 years.
Oh, Man, that was a long walk. My GPS is telling me I've walked around 36 kilometers through the Kalutz. This is nearly the end of my trek into the Kalutz. Another very beautiful feature of the Kalutz of Kerman, in other words, the Kalutz of Shahdad, is the Nepka Forest Park. These very beautiful plants you see behind me here are in fact the trees that have formed this Nepka Forest Park. Only two species, salt cedars and saxels, which have grown here and created this beautiful and unique landscape. This area obviously looks different from others. The Nepka's Forest Park forms the vegetation on the fringe of the Kalut area. But this green patch fades away as you move from the cold mountains of Sirj to the hot, dry Kalutz. And in the heart of the Kalutz, there is hardly any vegetation at all. But Mother Nature has created a matchless forest in the area between the Sirj mountains and the Kalutz. This strange land formation I'm standing next to is not your simple hill. It is the world's biggest natural vase known as the Nepka. This phenomenon is called Nepka in the African Sahara, Shur Moro in the central areas of Iran, and Talagaz by those living on the eastern and southeastern plains of Iran. When sandstorms blow past the vegetation in this area, they leave behind some of the dirt and sand at the foot of these plants. When the wind blows, some of the sand and dirt is trapped in the trees and crashes to the ground, creating a mound over time. In order to survive, the trees use their long roots to absorb water and other nutrients buried underground. The dirt around the shrubs and trees contain more moisture. This relative moisture keeps the sand and earth in place around the plant. Of course, that leads to a portion of the trunk, branches, and leaves being buried, which in turn contributes to the solidification of the sand near the plant. Every natural Nepka vase is named according to the species it hosts. The Nepkas are called Talagaz or Talitar by the locals in this region. Another unique feature of Lut are these same Nepkas. They are the tallest natural vases in the world. The Nepkas of this kind have been seen in Africa too, but the ones in Africa are barely 3 meters tall. At their tallest, the Nepkas in Iran are 10 meters tall. Normally, Nepkas grow on flat surfaces. They best grow on moist land. The shape of the Nepka depends on the size, density, and growth rate of the host plant. In this Nepka forest, the dominant species is the salt cedar. My goodness, it looks more like a miracle. Just look how God instilled the hope for life in these salt cedars and saxels. When they're just small seedlings, winds dump massive amounts of sand onto them. But driven by their strong will to live, they continue to grow in order to survive. The battle between the wind and sand on one hand and these trees on the other has been going on forever. It's been around for millions of years. But what is really very important is that hope keeps everything and everyone alive. And these trees, because of their intrinsic sense of hope, the will for life, put their roots down and stand tall. They continue to grow as a means of survival. It's going to become stormy very soon. Desert storms are very dangerous. So what you need to do is find shelter somewhere or leave that area immediately. Fortunately, I'm very close to my next destination and I think I'm not going to run into any trouble. But I have to get going immediately or I'm going to get sand and dirt all over my body and stuff. My camera crew and I were taken off guard by the sudden change of weather and the subsequent sandstorm. One of the biggest powers of nature in a desert is the ability of sand and dust to penetrate each and every orifice during a storm, and our equipment was no exception. Sandstorms are among the biggest dangers of a desert. In some cases, such storms continue to blow for days and can cost nature travelers their lives. But there are other dangers lurking in other parts of this vast plain. Therefore, the best way to ensure a safe trip to Lut is to make the necessary arrangements with the relevant authorities in Kerman province and the city of Shahdad. From Shahdad, I had to walk around 250 kilometers to the west of the province, to a place only 15 kilometers away from Rafsanjan. Kerman is a province with limited water resources. Many of the deep wells in the province have dried up. But deep in the heart of Rafsanjan's crisis-hit nature, there is a canyon that sparkles like a diamond. You might be thinking this isn't Iran, that I'm speaking to you from another country. But you're wrong. This is our beloved Iran, and I'm now standing atop a scary deep canyon, the rugged Grand Canyon of Rafsanjan. Valleys and canyons are strange yet beautiful natural phenomena, and they become even more beautiful if their emergence is not the result of orogeny, rather if it's the result of thousands or millions of years of erosion by wind, sand, and water of flat plains. Raga Grand Canyon is one such ravine, a peerless, pristine valley in Kerman province. I was amazed at the view of the canyon from above. The pointed cones, the big and small columns carved out by erosion, the arcs, the partitions and wall-like strips were only a few of all the beautiful features of this canyon. Raga is around 20 kilometers long. Its width varies between 3 and 100 kilometers, and in some places it is around 80 meters deep. Walking on top of it could have been very dangerous. My goodness, it's really scary, but it's magnificent at the same time. At this point, I think it's around 70 meters deep from where I'm standing. If I fall into it, there will be nothing left of me. It's dangerous to be here because the earth here is very soft and can slide at any moment. So you'll have to keep a safe distance while walking along these beautiful walls. It's ruggedly beautiful indeed. You can get the most beautiful view of the canyon from up here, but every side of it offers its own unique beauty. What I'm really happy about is the fact that there is no construction work happening anywhere in a 20-kilometer radius. There are no roads. That's why this ravine has maintained its pristine status, and of course, the area around it too. My hope is that we can preserve this untouched ravine and its surroundings the way they are and leave them to the next generation, and they to the generation that comes after them, just like the way it looks now. I hope so. The canyon's geomorphology and its pristine environs made for beautiful scenery, and that had provided a good habitat for certain species of animals in and around it. This region and this gorge are so intact, they've become home to various species of birds, such as eagles that have built their nests in recesses high on the walls where they feel safe. I'm very excited and counting every minute for the walk on the bed of the canyon. But the best time to do it would be tomorrow because I don't have enough time for it today. Raga Canyon is a good destination for geologists and nature travelers venturing into the Loot. The vegetation, such as salt cedar trees in some parts of the canyon, made the canyon even more beautiful. From the bottom up, ravines look just as beautiful. I walked along much of Raga Canyon from above and captured many beautiful views of it, but it was now time to go down to the bottom of it. This part of the wall is solid. It's hard to walk on. It's very steep too, as you can see. You have to take a lot of care going down. My God, yes! At the bottom, the canyon was beautiful and scary. I kept thinking its walls were going to come crashing down any minute. Walking at the foot of those majestic walls, I felt how little and weak I was compared to the canyon and to its creator. On one hand, the beautiful long natural statues, and on the other, the tunnel-shaped arcs carved into the walls were all astonishing. Statues chiseled by gravity pulling down the dirt and pebbles on the walls of the ravine. The view down here is simply breathtaking. The huge, majestic statues carved out on the walls of the canyon have taken thousands of years to be made. As loose earth from the top of the canyon cascaded down to the bottom over the years, it created these beautiful shapes on these walls. They are stunning. Some of them look like humans and others like certain animals. This canyon is just as beautiful down on its bed as it is from above. This dry tree over here, in fact, there are many others scattered across the ravine. Floodwaters on the highlands and on the plains sweep them up along with some of the trees that grow at the mouth of the canyon in spring and dump them over here. It's a bizarre scene here. It's very dangerous to come here in the spring season because floodwaters are deadly.
Thank you.
Ravine exploration is among the most interesting fields in nature traveling. There are many adventurers around the world who are in love with exploring valleys and canyons. But this field of sport comes with its own hidden dangers. The collapse of the walls or falling from the edge of a canyon's walls are among those dangers. But there's another more serious threat to the life of nature travelers, which is seasonal floodwaters caused by rainfall. Just take a look at what seasonal rivers have done to these walls. The water can be around 2 meters deep here at the time of a flood and can be fatal. Whenever I travel to a place like this, I study up on its weather and climate before I set out so I won't run into any trouble. So when it's raining, you better not be anywhere near the bottom of any ravine. Although Raga Canyon is very wide and the floodwaters flowing in pose a less serious threat, it is likely for torrential rain to come down in the nearby areas. And that means flash floods at a certain time during a day or night or a whole day. So at a time like that, you better not come here. Most nature travelers take all kinds of precautions prior to their adventure. But most of them don't pay much attention to the climate of the places they travel to. They don't take the weather forecasts very seriously. In 2005, 11 mountaineers from Ghazvin, with all their equipment and years of experience, entered Andres Canyon in Alborz province. But because they had ignored the weather forecast and the predicted rain, they had an accident. During rainfalls, valleys and canyons that offer no escapes are the most dangerous places in the natural world to be. In that year, heavy rain set off floodwaters in Andres Canyon, and unfortunately, it took the lives of all 11 mountaineers. Therefore, the most important thing that natural explorers should take into account is the weather forecast, the difficulty of the route they're traveling on, and their mental and physical strength for the trip ahead. You can't put a price tag on the environment. All those who walk into nature speak of it as a cathartic experience and absorb massive amounts of positive energy. In my opinion, because the natural world is a manifestation of the greatness and beauty of God, I have walked a very long distance. I'm about to arrive at the end of the canyon. I'm going to have to get out of it before dark sets in, concluding another leg of my trip. It's very easy to pollute your environment, but that's not right. It only goes to show how irresponsible we humans can be. We have to take responsibility for the environment in our country and in the entire planet. We mustn't dump our garbage out in the open and instead send it to the recycling system. We must treat nature the same way we do our homes. Only then can we say we are committed to other humans, to the planet Earth, and to future generations. I'm approaching the end of my trip. I have no doubt that many of my countrymen and women are not familiar with the beautiful natural wonders of Kerman province. And many of the officials in the province don't seem to be aware of the great potential these natural wonders have as tourist destinations. In addition to its old history and culture, the province boasts unique natural features on a par with their counterparts in the rest of the world. In the developed world, development doesn't include building roads, hotels, and tourism centers in the heart of the environment. In the century we live in, development and progress is tantamount to the unconditional and responsible preservation of the environment, and sustainable development of the tourism industry can easily set in motion the big wheels of the country's economy. The environment in Iran is very fragile and sensitive, but with proper professional preservation and protection, by people and officials alike, it can turn into a big generator of jobs and revenues, provided that we appreciate what we have and do all we can to preserve what's left of Iran's untapped natural world. We should perish the thought of construction on it.
I'm sure you'll agree with me that Iran's deserts, with their varied and dramatic landscapes of canyons, yardangs, and their beautiful flora and fauna, are a unique destination for the demanding traveler to discover a wealth of exceptional and unspoiled views. And that's it for this week. Do keep in touch with us, and until next week, goodbye.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, Islamic housing. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of the Islamic housing and how should we have our houses in an Islamic way. Generally, what we see is in today's world, the lifestyle is changing. And since it is changing, the new developments are coming. And the houses are changed to the apartments. People are generally living into the small compounds, into the small apartments. Maybe it is a one-bed apartment or two-bed, or it's a small compound. Even we can see in some countries, because they have a big population, due to that, the people are forced to live in very, very small compound where one person only can sleep. On top of that, in the other part of the world, we can see, especially like in the UK, that because they have these houses as their heritage, and it is the part of their culture and heritage, so they have saved it, and people are generally living in those houses, which are the specific houses. But what about the Islam? Does Islam give us a specific rule about it? Does Islam talks about the housing and the way of Islamic lifestyle? So when we look at this, we see that what Islam says is that you need to look at your needs, and you should have a house according to your need, and this is what Islam emphasizes on. Therefore, we should not have anything beyond that. On top of that, in Islam, we had that the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam has said, "Min sa'adatil mar'i al-muslim al-maskanul wasi'." It is from the sa'adat, or the goodness of the a man, which is a Muslim man, to have a big house. But what does this big house mean? Inshallah, we will explain. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of the Islamic housing. And we said that the Prophet ﷺ, in one of his narrations, he said that it is from the happiness of the Muslims is to have a big house. Wasi' means it should be a vast or a big house. Now, this big house should be according to the needs of the people, because what we can see in the other narrations from what we have seen in the Islamic teachings, it is that this big house should be in a way which can bring a happiness. For example, the people who are living in the compounds or apartments, they do not have any courtyard where their kids can run, can play, or they can sometimes, if they're like fed up with sitting under the roof, so they can go out and enjoy the sun, or there's a bigger place to enjoy and to live and to change the mood. Therefore, it is very necessary that when we talk about the housing, or especially Islamic housing, it should be planned in a way that this should bring the happiness in the life of the person. And it should be built in a way that it is showing the Islamic lifestyle. And the Islamic lifestyle can be followed easily in such houses, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum.